to the pipeline. I'm Corey Morgan. This is the Western Standard's weekly panel show where a number of us will crawl out of the newsroom and start to dissect and analyze some of those news issues and items that have been popping up and dominating the scroll for the week. We got a lot of them to go through today. Lots of stuff to chew on and ruminate and think about and offer you the solutions that, I know you couldn't come up with on your own, right? All the wisdom in this room, how could we not solve all the problems? And I'll get on to joined by the wise. I've got our opinion editor, Nigel Hannaford.
I get all my wise ideas from my wife before I come to work in the morning.
Recognizing that as a form of wisdom already.
Absolutely. Works for me.
Perfect. And our news editor, Dave Naylor.
Nice to be part of the two wise men. And
back in studio twice in one day.
Back in studio twice in one day. The internet problems will do that for you.
Those lights are going to give you a tan line.
Exactly.
Right. Well, let's get to it. Something, I don't know if it's surprising or not surprising, but we've got some polling numbers coming out showing the UCP seems to be doing all right.
The UCP seems to be doing all right. Abaca's poll out today shows them 15 points ahead of the NDP if an election was held today. So, Premier Smith's had some controversies, Nigel, as you know, and seems to have come through them on the other side. And also, interestingly, the poll shows that she would also handily defeat Naheed Nenshi if he happens to win the NDP leadership campaign.
Not that I have any wish to be especially fair to Naheed Nenshi or any other person who wins the NDP leadership, but frankly, until they've had a chance to speak up, set out their stall, it's probably a little premature to be saying, well, they'd get defeated anyway. I mean, the man is a powerful speaker, and there are some people who will like what he says when they've had a chance to digest it. Assuming that he is, in fact, the chosen one, that would be the time to run a poll and see how he stands up. What I think has happened here is the Premier Smith, after an admittedly jumpy start, this was somebody used to driving automatic, had just been given a stick shift. There were a few jolts along the way, but she's got the hang of it now. And she has accurately, I think, represented the popular sentiment in Alberta towards what the federal government has done to our primary industry and, by extension, is doing to Albertans generally in this foolishness that the federal government has put out with the demand for a net zero grid in an impossibly short time. I think everybody who has experienced 30 below on a dark night understands what utter folly that is, and they're falling in behind her.
Yeah, well, and I would think some of it too. I mean, people have gotten familiar with Premier Smith. I mean, it was a very, from the moment she ran for the leadership, negative opponents campaigning against her from within the UCP initially, and then certainly in the general election later. I mean, they accused her of pretty much everything was going to happen if she became premier. It would rain frogs, your milk would sour, she would illegalize gay marriage, or who knows what else. They accused her of anything and everything, and people have seen after a year and some that, yes, as you said, she might be having some troubles getting into gear with a number of items. She's not extreme. The world isn't ending. We've seen that before with Prime Minister Harper. I mean, they said the world was going to end when he became prime minister as well, and nothing of the sort happened.
So, just the liberal world.
Yes. I will say, it doesn't matter what the issue is, Premier Smith seems very, very well briefed and very informed on the topic, whether it's healthcare, electricity, Ukrainian refugees, whatever it is, she's read the file and she knows what she's talking about. I don't think I can remember her being unprepared for a question at a press conference. She's always got answers right on the top of her mind.
Well, you got to remember that the premier is somebody who would rather read a policy brief before she goes to sleep at night than a novel. She eats this, eats and drinks this stuff, always has. So I'm not surprised to find that she's very, very well briefed.
Well, she has been blessed for a while, too, though, with an NDP that's, leaderless, effectively. I mean, Rachel Notley is still hanging in there till the new leader comes in. But once they announce, they become lame duck. And it does give an advantage to the government when you don't have an established person. I mean, as you said, it remains to be seen. But whether it's Naheed Nenshi or maybe Old Gill, if it keeps things exciting enough, or somebody else. But there will be a figure, at least, to stand and critique and focus on being an effective opposition, perhaps, for the UCP. So, I mean, this might be reflected a bit of having a weak opposition rather than a strong government at this time.
Sorry, I'm just going to say that, Nenshi train seems to be picking up steam. He held a rally in Edmonton last night. 1,200 people showed up in Edmonton for a rally. And, you know, he knows how to play to the crowd. He went backstage and came out and, you know, held up a Oilers jersey and said, this is his team. He's supporting for years. And look how well-worn my Oilers jersey is. And, he deliberately leaves the brand new tag hanging out and he quickly shuffles it back. He says, oh, no. And says, I'm never going to wear it. I'm not an Edmontonian, but I do love this city. He's got years of experience in these type of crowds, and he knows how to work them. The name escapes me. I'm sorry, of the lady who withdrew this week, and threw her support threw her support behind Nenshi. So there's only five others in the race now. But there's such a thing as momentum in politics, and he's certainly got it.
There's one other thing that Smith has done right. The center of gravity of public opinion on everything to do with trans is not where the progressives think it is. Mm-hmm. Two-thirds of the people out there think there are men and women, and end of story. She is now identified with that point of view. So, by the way, are 25 U.S. states which have banned gender reassignment surgery, sex change operations on people under 18. Now, she's the only leader in Canada who's done that. But I think that there is a sort of a comfortable feeling of at least she's got common sense enough to know the difference between men and women and leave it at that. And if people want to do something different when they're older, they can. It's a free country. But people are giving her credit for that as well.
Well, she's following the lead that a lot of progressive European nations have already been doing, whether in the UK or Sweden, I believe Finland. Again, they've all been saying, hey, we're getting a little too far with the kids. Yeah. Leave it until they're 18. I mean, and most people agree, despite the hysteria we hear from legacy media and activists over this. Yeah, if Premier Smith truly was out to get trans children and harm them, it would have been reflected in the polls, and certainly didn't.
No.
And I'm kind of surprised no other premiers have done the same thing. You look at Doug Ford in Ontario, and he took a step back and wants nothing to do with it. I think the mainstream media driven hysteria has now sort of gone away, and the dust has settled, and people can realize, hey, they are doing it all over Europe. They are doing it all over the United States. Maybe it's not such a bad thing.
To give credit where credit is due, there are a couple of premiers who did take baby steps to begin
yes.
with. Blaine Higgs in
yes.
New Brunswick probably deserves the credit for doing something, however small it might seem now. He stuck his neck out a long way and nearly got it chopped off.
Yeah, he started it.
If
right.
he had not done what he did, I don't think the others could have done what they've done.
Yeah, and what he stood up for, if people didn't know, was parental rights yeah. in schools.
That's what same with Scott Moe in Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to segue a little more, that was sort of the indication that Nahed Nenshi was going to throw his hat in on the NDP leadership. He showed up at a rally with, hundreds out of the millions of Albertans that came out to scream and shout and gave a barn-burning speech about, the evils of Premier Smith. And that kind of goes into where we do have him now officially in the race. And the legacy media is dutifully lining up as they did when he was running for mayor and pumping his tires. But again, as I said, he's skilled. He knows how to play the game. He scared one of the candidates off already. Word is that the memberships have doubled at the NDP just since he entered. Momentum is everything, and this leadership is a freight train that's going to take this over.
It sounds like he's getting his old band back together, all the people that helped him get into the first mayoral victory in Calgary. He's hired some of those people back, and some old colleagues are now his media spokesmen. So it is almost like a time warp for Mr. Nenshi.
Well, and I guess some of it, too, though, is, okay, he's lit some fire in what had been a pretty dull NDP leadership race, actually. I mean, people hadn't really been paying much attention to it, and they're watching it now. But can he win in the general election? That's the other question people will have. I mean, there's two challenges. You can see why he's focusing in Edmonton, because two things. Edmontonians don't like voting for Calgarian leaders. And he has a lot of baggage in Calgary. People are presuming he's going to pick up a bunch of Calgary seats, but Calgarians don't all fondly remember Ned Nenshi's term as mayor. It wasn't that long ago.
There were lots of tax increases. Oh, yeah. And that the poll I was talking, Abacus poll, showed him, he would lose to Danielle Smith. Yeah. So he's not going to, take over, on a political role to go right into the premier's office. He's got a lot of work to do. And you're right, Corey, there's a lot, certainly in my small circle of friends, there's no love lost for Ned Nenshi. He's got some work to do.
Did you hear the rumor that was going around that they've actually got a psychiatrist on the Nenshi team just so everybody plays nicely together?
Well, maybe he got the same one as what he had in City Hall. Yeah. I mean, that is the beginning of. And I mean,
probably had him on a retainer still.
I've never been a fan of Nenshi and him. And I, I've poked at him over the years on a number of things. And he gives a lot. And I tell you, I'm going to be reminding people of some of his things, as I reminded recently on social media. He gave 300 and some thousand Calgarian tax dollars to the Pembina Institute. Like, the city was contracting an anti-oil group to advise. He spent so heavily and taxed so hard that business groups actually rallied at City Hall. Like, you don't see business owners waving signs and screaming and yelling. They were that desperate. Their backs were against the wall. Remind people of that.
And the last big vote he was involved in, the Olympic plebiscite, he lost. That was his dream. That was going to be his legacy, Olympics again in Calgary, because he's always been a huge Olympic fan, and he lost that vote. So, he's not the powerful force in Calgary he used to be.
He'll have some years to work on it if he wins the leadership. I would say he does appear to be a top contender at this time. I mean, some of the question was whether the NDP would embrace, the pragmatism of going for somebody like Ned Nenshi rather than a union sort or somebody who put in their time. It looks like his takeover, it doesn't matter whether they're going to embrace it or not.
Kathleen Ganley is going to, she was a perceived front runner. She's going to have to up her game.
I think Mr. Nenshi is going to have to depend very heavily on people forgetting the things that you've just brought up.
I'm going to make sure.
So your job, you have one job.
The other part that will be interesting to watch, presuming he wins too, though, and people have critiqued him on it many a time. As you said, he brought in a psychologist to try and calm the council that he had stirred up like a nest of hornets. Leading a political party is a whole world different than running a council, which he had difficulty with 14 people. You're going to have a caucus full of ambitious people, people with different ideas. Gil McGowan will have his nose out of joint, and he's entrenched on your party board, whether you like him or not, so you better figure out how to play nice with him. He's really going to have to learn some contrition and compromise, which are two things that he's never been capable of before. So,
it's a whole new game for him.
It almost makes you want to join the party and work your way up just to be the fly on the wall, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I tried to run for a nomination with him at one time, but they declined me. So,
perhaps it was your photo of you sitting in the outhouse.
I was making a valid political point. I even have my best pussy hat on for that. Well, we'll watch and see. I mean, Nenshi's not one to be underestimated anyways. That's one thing. He's got challenges, but he's got strengths too. And he is a good communicator. And some people think very fondly of him. And it might turn the tide. We'll see. He's got a few years to work on it. Well, let's get over to Ottawa.
Corey, I'm going to do a rude thing. I'm going to interrupt you.
Yeah.
You probably didn't get the revised schedule.
I probably didn't.
No, so we need to talk about Edmonton.
Okay, let's talk about Edmonton.
We need to talk about Edmonton City Council.
Ah, yes.
And Post Media, give them credit. They had a great story today that province is looking at maybe coming in and taking over, basically. Yeah, auditing the books. Yeah. David Staples, good story. Premier confirmed it at a press conference today. She basically said that... it's up to Edmonton. They're waiting for a phone call from Mayor Sohi. She said, we're willing to help. Municipal Affairs Minister Rick McIver, willing to help. Apparently, there will be a letter sent at some point on Wednesday to McIver outlining concerns. There were questions about fraud and bullying and a UCP source, but a legislature source told me that the economic situation in Edmonton is pretty grim in terms of money mismanagement and how much money they have online. So Premier Smith confirmed they're going to move in if need be, and they're just waiting for the call. So a hugely significant story. You know, you hear sometimes about school boards being replaced or the mayor of Chestermere being kicked out. But for the province to move in on the capital city, unheard of.
Certainly is. You're right about the stories about boards and councils being taken over. I mean, actually, there's a beautiful irony in this. And back in the late 90s, the premier herself, Danielle Smith, was a member of the Calgary School Board that got taken over by the provincial government of the day. So she was
Lyle Olberg, I think, who had to step in.
Yeah, so I, the details of all that I never knew firsthand, and what I was told I've forgotten, but I always thought that must be an extremely unusual situation, and I guess it is. But sometimes the senior level of government has to come to the rescue of the junior one, especially when they're led by former Liberal cabinet ministers. So he is. I don't know that we can necessarily blame all the problems on one person, but again, as long as we're exploring the field of irony, there it is.
Well, you talk about rats fleeing the sinking ship, and I don't mean to call them rats by any means, but eight senior Edmonton officials have left recently, including the city manager, you know, basically the top guy. They've all left. They know something's coming down. They know that, hey, there's problems here. So it's going to be a massive news story, I think.
Well, this won't be well received. I mean, a government would never take something like that lightly. I mean, imagine if our provincial government was getting haywire and we were in some sort of a deadlock in the legislature, and Prime Minister Trudeau said, well, I'm going to ride my horse in and take over and put things back in order. Even if we had a local mess, that's our mess. Well, I don't think Edmontonians might appreciate the premier.
You notice the premier is very carefully saying, we're waiting for the letter.
Yeah.
Nobody is going to push the doors open and barge in. They're going to have to be invited in. But that's going to be a very hard letter for anybody in Edmonton to write in the city administration.
Yeah, sounds like
we screwed up. Come and help us.
Sounds like it may not come from administration, but it may come from councillors saying, look, this is happening. We need you to investigate. Mm-hmm. We need you to help. And yeah, you know, talking about Edmonton is a NDP city. So you're right, Corey. They're not going to be looked at very nicely for taking over unless the situation is so bad that they you know, an Edmontonian can say, yeah, okay, you better get in there then. Because it's their tax dollars, right?
Oh, yeah. And the governments have the ability. Like, I know people who aren't, you know, constitutional weenies like us or whatever, to realize that, like, the provincial government is constitutionally entrenched with their authority and things they can do, and the federal government is. Municipal governments, though, they're actually controlled by, and they are an arm of, the provincial government. They can step in at will and change things in those. They don't have the autonomy that other levels of government would. So, I mean, not that the provincial government would be eager to step in, but they do have the authority to if they have to.
Or if they must, yeah, that's right. You know, maybe we should have expected that something was more seriously wrong in Edmonton than we ever suspected, just by some of the news stories that have come out of Edmonton. I'm thinking of the homeless camps and the parlous state of affairs. And
electric buses.
They've had a transit fiasco. I mean, and their LRT expansion is hopelessly delayed and not working and being rebuilt. Their own buses are falling apart. Their electric buses aren't working. I mean, these are major civic issues, and they don't seem to be able to get a grasp on them.
Well, and just the general tone of the place, the homelessness and how that translates into a public safety threat on the transit or even just walking down the street. Sometimes wokeism actually is the thing that kills itself because you just can't make it work.
Premier Smith was asked about Medicine Hat. Why aren't you intervening in Medicine Hat? They're a mess. And they are right now. They're in all sorts of trouble. And the premier replied, well, you know what? They're not in financial trouble. They've got their own corporations. They've got their gas corporation and whatnot. So, you know, let them work it out. And there's no real urgency for us to get in because there's no financial crises, which, again, leads more to the fact that perhaps Edmonton is about to announce one.
Well, and that's going to be interesting to watch. I mean, I'm really looking forward to seeing what comes out because cities are more constrained. They can't run deficit budgets like other levels of government can. There's ways they work around it. I know Calgary likes dumping its debt on their Crown Corporation, and they also find ways that they can issue bonds that can, you know, get them a workaround for debt. But still, they're pretty limited. They can't borrow uncontrollably like provincial and federal governments do. So it's going to be interesting to see how Edmonton, or what's so dire that they did with their finances then that they can't.
It's going to be interesting to see. You're now back on course.
Back to Ottawa, the other land of the loons. The Sound of Silence is the title on this. We got a couple of parts, and we're talking April 1st tax increases.
Tax increases. We got your carbon tax going up, your alcohol tax going up. MPs are okay because they're getting a big raise. They'll be able to cover all that. So there was provincially in Alberta, the fuel tax goes back on. So our loony environment minister, Gilbo, tweeted out this weekend, hey, you know, why don't you, you know, we've got our carbon tax, you've got your carbon tax, you know, stop being picky about it. Premier Smith replied, well, sir, our fuel tax goes to build roads and to fix roads, whereas your carbon tax does absolutely nothing. Then there was yesterday, four or five premiers wrote letters to the government demanding to testify in front of the Commons Finance Committee about the carbon tax. They were rejected. Premier Mo today on Wednesday was able to get onto a lesser committee and jousted with some Liberal MPs there. And Premier Smith is going to do the same thing today. On Thursday. So they don't get the Finance Committee, but they get a lower committee. So April Fool's on all of us. Suggest you all fill up your gas tanks on March 31st. Drain every gas station you can find, because gas is going up markedly on April 1st, and the foolish battle between Alberta and the feds continue.
So is that the day you're going to start taking the C train in?
No, because my commute is going to be screwed for the next 18 months while the city of Calgary fixes a bridge. It's going to take them 15 months, 16, 17 months to fix a bridge, for God's sake. It's ludicrous.
Yeah, I posted
but that's
that.
Another issue.
Yeah, the Empire State Building was built, you know, almost 100 years ago in a matter of a year. Calgary can't rehabilitate a bridge in less than a year and a half. We got some issues here that may need some.
Please, Premier Smith, move in, take over the bridge at least.
But this carbon tax, I mean, it's really, it's turning into quite a battle. I mean, the government's pulling out all the stops. They've got this lineup of university economists now to all come out together and say that they love the carbon tax and it's good for Canadians and blah, blah, blah. Nobody's buying it. You know, the premiers are revolting, the citizens have had it, but this Liberal government is just prepared to die on this hill.
Well, it is, because they know they're not going to get reelected in 2025. On October it's a week later than it was.
27th, yeah. I think.
27th, that's right, yes.
They know that they're not going to get reelected. They know that they've got their pensions locked in. And so they're now just going to say, listen, we've got nothing left to save, we will just do everything we ever said we would do, and people can suffer the consequences of it because it'll be good for them. And that is the second thing about this. This carbon tax is not what they say it is. It is actually intended to change people's behavior. Mr. Trudeau said that himself when he was made an address in Calgary last month, earlier this month, up at the Southern Alberta Institute of Technology. And he said, we mean this to change people's behavior. It's a market solution, he said, as if that deceived any conservative in the crowd. whatever serves the interests of this climate change religion to which they subscribe, they're going to do. So a lot of things that aren't going to make sense. And the thing is that people like you coming in from the South actually do not have the options that people who live in that T2P postal district have. Probably don't even own a car. Excuse me. So this is like a rear guard action. We'll go down fighting. We unfortunately got to pick up the pieces at the end of it.
And people's behavior won't change. You said with Dave, you're not going to add two more hours to your day and get on the crackhead laden train to ride that up to get to the office every day. What's going to happen is you're going to get a little bit poorer and you're going to have to pay more just to get downtown and back. I can't take the bus from Prentice. We don't have one. So I guess I'd have to hitchhike if I wanted to change my behavior. You know, we can't turn down our heat to an unsurvivable level. That's the thing is these are fixed behaviors that they're trying to change and it's not working. I mean, if they could make the case that it's working, I still wouldn't like it, but I could understand it. But there's no evidence this is changing anybody's behavior. It's just making them broke.
No, by the way, and all those thousands of cars that go over the flyover every day, they're still going to come downtown. They just have to find other routes. Yeah. And holy cow, talk about rush hour traffic.
You know, if this little weird thing here, we've not learned anything since the Second World War. If this was 1944 and the Bow River was actually an obstacle to the advance of the Canadian Army, they'd have the Royal Army Corps of Engineers down there. They'd have something up for you in 12 hours and something that was actually dependable in 24. You know, why do we not think outside the box on things like this and just say, fine, it's going to take 18, I don't know why it takes 18 months to fix the Langevin Bridge, but if it takes 18 months, fair enough. Well, let's do something different while we're fixing it.
Yeah.
This is a big city. We can do stuff like that.
And you see other countries build bridges in the weekend.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, why is it? I mean, again, we got we're way off.
That's a whole discussion.
We're way off topic here. Yeah. But 18 months to refurbish a 400 meter bridge is ludicrous.
The best discussions are always off topic. Yeah, you know
exactly.
Stories that don't matter. The ones that people read.
Well. All right, well, I'll bring it to a screeching halt to something a lot darker, I'm afraid. We'll get off of the bridges in the federal scene and talk about medically assisted assistance in death made, as everybody knows it, and there's been challenges and there's been adjustments, and now there's been a court ruling resolving, I guess you could say, one of the challenges.
Yeah, well, resolving for 30 days. It's a really sad story. A Calgary dad has applied for an injunction to stop his 27-year-old daughter from committing suicide. She has autism and other disabilities that make her want to end her life. Dad sought an injunction. Calgary Court of King's Bench Justice this week overruled the injunction and set it aside. So the woman now can go ahead and commit suicide. But he did uphold it for 30 more days because he knows it's going to be appealed. And the dad's lawyers, I'm sure, are working on that. They'll go to the Alberta Court of Appeal. There'll be a ruling there. That ruling will be delayed until the Supreme Court deals with it. So in the meantime, you've got this poor woman who wants to kill herself, still living in the same house as her poor father, who wants to keep her alive as we wait for the story to work its way through the justice system.
This is what they said would never happen.
Yeah.
You know, when we were first asked to accept medical assistance in dying as a dignified way for people who are in the most severe pain and only had a week to go or 10 days to go, like a very short time, the example would always be something like a person with ALS. Gehrig's disease, dreadful way to go. Let them depart early with the assistance of a doctor. And I, you know, even people who are against assisted suicide, which didn't really have an answer for that. Like, what is it that you want to willfully make somebody suffer for 7 days longer than they need to? And so we lost the argument, but we warned at the time that the 7 days would become 14, and the people whose death was imminently foreseeable would become the people whose death would take place at some future time, and the boundaries would be, we'll never put it for young people, and never for the mentally ill. I'm not saying this woman is mentally ill, by the way, just in case, but you know. there was always going to be a fence around it. Well, if a 27-year-old woman can, with apparently a supportive family, can, no, I'm going to do it anyway, and the courts are prepared to back her, it's what we said would always happen, and it has.
Well, this woman's case, does she have a physiological ailment, or is it just the autism?
I think the autism is the major one.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's got aches and pains and, you know, is uncomfortable all the time.
Yeah. It's just, you know, that's where we get into some of these discussions. I mean, it was also, it's such a complicated realm. We speak of somebody then, if they're an adult and have their physiological faculties, let's face it, if you really want to end it, it's not that hard. And people sadly do quite often through a number of means, you know, their pills or whatever other creative ways people unfortunately choose their end of in their lives. Do you necessarily need the state to do it? I mean, again, if somebody's, you know, in a physiologically restrained condition, they can't even get out of a bed, they're in agony. I mean, that's a whole different ballpark. But we're talking about people that are quite able. And I'm not suggesting that she should do it herself. I'm just saying that why now do we have this responsibility of our health system and the state then to facilitate it?
Uh-huh. It's a quagmire. It really is a quagmire. And, you know, I feel so sorry for the father, and you hope it works out well for the family. And, you know, they're the test case. And, you know, we haven't even got to the mentally ill part yet. I mean, that's coming. That's coming down the road in the next year or so when mentally ill people can take the choice. We've got poor people who want to commit suicide now because they can't afford the cost of housing. I mean, should that be allowed? You know, we lead the world in medically assisted suicides.
I'm wondering, with some of the people who are poor saying they want to do it because they're poor, but I wonder if they're not using it to make a political statement. I mean, again, if you're so poor you can't make the bills and you want to end your life, well, you can afford a length of rope and do it. But you can make a loud political statement about your financial state of being and how desperate you are by using a challenge for this policy. See, this has turned into a whole, as you said, quagmire is the term.
Well, last year, for which we have the numbers, I think it was 2022, 15,000 medical-assisted dying cases. Only about 3,500 of the regular old-fashioned suicide. And it's been a steady 3,500 to 4,000 for the last 10 years, which is kind of as much of Statistics Canada as I've gone back. And in that time, they've gone from zero medical assistance in dying to almost four times as many people taking medical assistance in dying as are committing suicide by other means. You know, build it and they will come.
Well, yeah, and then people have been encouraging it. Cases we've seen, there was a gentleman who did have some serious conditions. That was a few years ago, and he actually recorded it on his phone. He was in a hospital where the nurse was pretty much making it clear, you know, you're not going to recover. You're in terrible discomfort. You really should be considering this.
Did she tell him that they needed the bed as well?
Well, that was probably the underlying part of it. You know, for a cold person who's looking at it, you know, well, this guy's a goner in 3 weeks. Why don't we just speed it up so we could put somebody else in it? But somebody who might not have been considering it previously, when you get somebody making the pitch to you, then there's a better chance you're going to embrace it when perhaps you might not.
We've got Veterans Affairs people telling veterans, hey, have you considered?
Yeah.
And how ludicrous
for PTSD.
Is that? It's also a big issue right now in Great Britain where they don't have legally assisted suicide. So the British people who want to kill themselves have to fly to Switzerland, have it done in a clinic there. And there's all sorts of handheld videoed people dying and saying their last message, please, you know, England, let's get on this. Let's do this in England. Bring in a law so we can have medically assisted suicide in England. And that's their farewell to the world. And off they go. And it's becoming a huge political issue over there as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, this will chew through more of the courts. And there's not going to be any easy decisions. It's one of those many times I'm not envying a judge. I mean, you've also got an adult woman, even though she is living with her father. There's a degree of autonomy. You know, you never stop being a parent. We know that. But from the legal perspective, he doesn't really have any legal standing when it comes to her disposition unless he can find her mentally incapable of.
Yep, that's what the courts have ruled. She can do what she wants.
We have to talk about it in dispassionate terms, but this is always a horribly personal and deeply, deeply distressing discussion between whoever's involved. And I do sympathize with people who are dealing with a person who wants to kill themselves, and they themselves are torn because on the one side they can understand and empathize with the pain and distress of the person who wants to go, and at the same time, unless it's truly an ALS last week of life situation, it's hard to get on board with the idea of facilitating their farewell.
It is, and again, we'll have those. I mean, now that they've moved into the realm of the mental health issues, we've gone beyond the physiological. Yeah. But like, you know, I'll finish with just a bit on a personal note. You guys kind of know I share, but my father has been debilitated. He mental health issues, very serious, and he's very paranoid. He's quite unfortunately delusional in a lot of things. He's doing okay physically for someone his age, but he's miserable. He is living in misery. He just stares out a window all day. He truly feels that the world is out to kill him and things such as that. And he lives in terror. Every knock on the door is the one who's going to take him out. Now, I'm not saying that I'd like to see that option applied to him, but I am kind of seeing how horrible a life is when a mental health issue can still be quite agonizing if you're enduring it and living within that weird world of a non-reality. I mean, offering that way out, I don't see as appropriate, but it's weird for us to put ourselves in the shoes of others to dismiss, well, it's just a mental health issue. Okay, but that can be pretty horrible to endure as well.
It can, but, you know, I hope this comes out right. We don't structure our world to accommodate people with a broken leg because we hope that the leg will be healed. And to define end-of-life issues in terms of people who are mentally ill is not a step forward.
No, I agree. I'm just saying that it's where, again, more of those complexities come in when you start thinking
about
it.
That come out right.
And he's not in a position to make that kind of decision either. That's another thing altogether. We're going to be, our kids will be dealing with these legalities and moral issues in this as well. Yep. Well, we'll watch with morbid interest, I guess.
Again,
some international issues. Hands across the sea to Ukraine.
Yes, the Ukrainian ambassador to Canada was visiting Alberta. Actually came into our newsroom and then met everybody. Premier Smith held a press conference today in Edmonton and sent a letter to Prime Minister Trudeau demanding more control for Alberta over immigration and specifically Ukrainian immigration or refugees from the war with Russia. Alberta's got the second highest number of Ukrainian descendants in Canada, so it's a natural place for them to come. And Alberta needs immigrants. We've got the jobs. We need to fill them, so Alberta wants more power to do it, much like, I guess, Quebec does. Ambassador came in, very nice young lady, and then disappeared for 40 minutes with Nigel. So I'll let Nigel explain what she had to say.
Well, just so that everybody knows, she was actually sitting where you are now sitting, and I was sitting where Corey was sitting, and it was a very good conversation. And I think it went on for a little longer than 40 minutes. But whatever it was, there's a lot going on here. First of all, we're appealing for Ukrainian immigrants. Do know that when the war is over, Ukrainian wants these people to go home again. You know, they're looking at another missing generation over there. This is a country that lost population, young people, right after the First World War as a consequence of the Russian Revolution. They lost another generation during the Holodomor when Stalin starved them out. They lost another generation in the Second World War with the devastation of the Germans going this way and the Russians coming back that way. Massive carnage. Well, guess what? We've got another war on and people are leaving the country. So there's population is about 40 million, so it's actually about the same size as Canada. The difference is Canada is growing, their population is declining. So, I mean, by all means, if they want to come here, let's make them welcome and let's put them to work. But don't necessarily expect that we're going to keep them. The other thing that she there was a lot in that interview, actually, and I would encourage people to tune in. I know we're going to have it on our website here fairly soon. But there are already people moving from Calgary to, speaking of energy specialists here, there is a memorandum of understanding that's waiting to be signed between the government of Ukraine and the government of Alberta that will facilitate the transfer of knowledge and, I think, professional services from Alberta to Ukraine to help them get back on their feet. Usually you think of reconstruction as something that happens after a war. It's going to help their war effort to start now, because obviously the energy component was one of the first things that the Russians hit. So they want to bring that back. And then she actually, and I've got a column on this, which again will be on the website later and with a link to the interview, but she is addressing the people who are losing interest, Canadians who are losing interest in the war in Ukraine, of which there are quite a number. There was a poll that came out, I think it was Angus Reid, maybe last week, that said that the number of people who said, you know, just let it go, doubled. So something like 40% of Canadians who think that after 2 years, maybe they should do something else. But at any rate, they are saying explicitly that we're spending too much time and providing too much aid to Ukraine. Well, obviously, that's not what they want to hear in Kyiv. And so she was addressing that. And she made this point, which I think is worth taking note of. When you look at a map of the world, you always look at the Mercator projection. So, you know, Canada's over here. Russia and Ukraine are over there. Why are we bothering? Well, instead of looking at a Mercator projection, take a globe, and then you've got Canada here and Russia just over there. I say just, it's actually a fair, you wouldn't want to try and swim it, but you know what I'm saying? It's there is a proximity there, and in between the two, there is this incredibly rich, apparently, seabed, which the Russians want to exploit. Well, we want to exploit it too, or at least we want to have the option of it. The time may come, said she, when you might be glad of collective security and friends. So it's a point worth keeping in mind. Meanwhile, I'm just frankly kind of proud of the Ukrainians I know for coming from a little people that'll stick up for themselves when they're bullied.
You know what? It's a good thing we have all those nuclear subs prowling under the our Canadian Navy, yep. You know, or dry dock, wherever they are. Yeah, she makes a good point. And, you know, you look at some of those videos of towns that the Russians have been through. There's nothing left standing. There's no homes, no homes left for them to go home to. So you can understand them, hey, you know, please come back after the war. And there's nothing to say that Ukraine's going to win the war. You know, 2 years, we're in a stalemate. They're running out of weapons and ammunition, and the money is stalled in Congress. You know, I don't know if the Russians have the will to fight much more, but you know, it's an ugly stalemate over there at the moment.
Well, and again, I mean, if it stabilizes even under Russian control, some of the Ukrainians here still might want to go back to the homeland. The war is over, whatever outcome it might be, but you know, they want to be back where they. So yeah, it's interesting. You didn't really think about that. You know, not all our immigrants are necessarily permanent ones. They could be just, again, trying to raise their family somewhere safe until they can go home.
No, you can't blame them for that. No.
Anyway, look for the Hannaford column tonight.
Yes, and remind everybody to watch for those videos on the Western Standard channels, those interviews and things, because there's more than just the pipeline and the Corey Morgan show. We cover a lot out there. Well, anyway, another thing Ukrainians are good with is Easter eggs. I can't forget how you pronounce that. I'm in Vegreville with Pysanka or something like that.
But, I don't know. Did the ambassador tell you how they pronounce it?
It never came up.
Never came up.
Well, but either way, nothing is sacred. Even our more conventional Western, Eastern, Easter eggs now have been hit by the woke, Dave.
Yeah, apparently Cadbury's, which Nigel, being the historian on the table, will fill you in about Cadbury's, but they're apparently selling not Easter eggs in England, but what is it?
A gesture.
Gesture eggs. I guess they didn't want to offend Muslims at the one of the most important Christian days of the year. So they're now available to get jester eggs. So not even the good old Easter bunny is safe from the woke crowd, Corey. And we know how well it worked out for Budweiser and Target and Dylan Mulvaney. And well, it worked out okay for them because they're getting money. But
well, I gather that you can still get a Cadbury's Easter egg. But the thing is, they're also marketing these gesture eggs. So this is the thin end of the wedge. But what is so... I don't know if you are a history buff and you take these things seriously, and especially the significance behind Easter itself. It's very distressing. I mean, the Cadbury family, they sort of rose in the 18th century, and during the height of the Victorian era, they became extremely successful as industrialists. But this was a Quaker family. They were very conscientiously Christian. They were abolitionists when it came to slavery. They were the kind of people who had advanced ideas about providing good accommodation for their workers, people who worked at their factories. They tried to do good with the wealth that they got, and they made Easter eggs. Well, the whole enterprise is now in the hands of people who have no sense of that history and no wish to perpetuate it. I predict that it will end badly. And the other thing that's, I couldn't help noticing it, there's a church here in Calgary. It's not a denomination that I'm familiar with, the Unitarians, but don't know what they believe, but somehow they managed to accommodate a drag show into their Easter worship services. So we live in strange times, and we, you know, for those of us who do take the things of God seriously, you know, and have a sense of what Easter is about and why it matters for everybody, these are just more slaps in the face that...
Well, the Unitarians, I am familiar with them. They're just a social club for leftists. They're people who like to pretend they're going to a church but actually have rejected every tenet of the religion itself, and they just get together and actually try to find ways to give finger to the traditions of the church, and they've done it with the Easter. And, yeah, we've seen the Easter eggs go to the sideline, but, you know, I'm sure a competitor will rise up and come up with Easter eggs. I don't think people like go that easy.
Well, we've got to get Nigel his own show on the History Channel.
Yes, yes.
Oh. I was just thinking we've got to get an Easter egg for this guy.
See, but, you know, the thing is, too, who was offended by them? It wasn't Muslims. You know, it was purple-haired, white-bread, woke, cellar-dwelling, liberal woman, and that's all it took was three complaints, and they scrambled to make something else. So, well... let the economy cure it. It's unfortunate a long tradition was ruined by the woke fools and cowards, but we're going to see more of it. Oh, well, I think we've run out of time to wax on about these things. So thank you very much for all of the contributions. We covered a lot of ground today, from the light to the pretty sad. And, well, we'll do it all again next week.
Yeah. Happy Easter to you and Jay. Yes, and Nigel, to you and Judy.
And to everybody else out there listening and watching, it's a long weekend. It's for Easter. Get out there, enjoy, whether religious aspect or just getting together family. That's what these weekends are for. Take advantage of it. The time goes fast. So thank you for tuning in today, and we will see you all again next week.
Canadian Shooting Sports Association. Without the CSSA, our gun rights would have been taken long, long ago. These guys are on the front lines, helping to draft smart and intelligent firearms regulations and legislation in Canada, and more importantly, educating the public about how we keep guns out of the hands of the wrong people. To become a member, it's absolutely worth every penny. You can become a Western Standard member for just $10 a month or $99 a year for unlimited access.